Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecock, the show! Built by the Barnuminium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chief Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders! Pressure, and he just dives in!
Can find easier looks from her perimeter players.
Al Powell's three is good. Bench. Clark. Oh my! From the future! And first turnover of the game. For Wiley, a three is good. Now South Carolina with numbers. Johnson bodies in and finishes. Cardoso working O'Grady. Cardoso and the foul. Johnson's three is good. Full Wiley whips it out. Pow-pow. Yes, yes. Squeezes it out to Full Wiley. Pow-pow's three again. With those two fouls as Kitts maneuvers inside. Hall lets it fly. You bet. Full Wiley flips it ahead. Johnson. Another. Tessa Johnson. In the pull-up, no, rebound, snare, Cardoso, unstoppable, perfection with a touch of sweet redemption, undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
The clock ticks down, 2 seconds to play, celebration in Cleveland, perfection wears garnet and black. The South Carolina Gamecocks complete their first perfect season with their third national championship.
Eddie, Gamecock flag is flying high atop the state house grounds for the third time. They are national champions, as we all saw last night. Greetings and good morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home. Inside the Gamecocks, this show live from the Cinerama Studios, the preferred side partners of your national champion, South Carolina Gamecocks. They did it in Cleveland, 87-75. Phil and JB here until 2 o'clock today. JC has a funeral and he will be back tomorrow. Thoughts and prayers are with his family. We're built by the Barn Dough Co., of course, and we are always served by Chicken Cock Bourbon. John Whittle and Mike Morgan ahead, and we will be helping them celebrate this national championship for quite some time. We're trying to string together all the guests that we can to recap this undefeated 38-0 season. But as you might imagine, today is a busy day for many of the fine folks that we lean on and have contacted. So we'll get there. I can assure you of that. But Phil, it was a magical, magical day after Iowa got off to a hot start. You figured they probably would with all the energy in the building, a lot of fans there for the Hawkeyes. But the Gamecocks, you just knew, would settle down at some point in time and do what they're capable of doing, which is playing their game and beating you with their game. And they did that. It was tremendous, a tremendous third ring for this program. And now they get to celebrate starting around a little bit after 2 o'clock today. As a matter of fact, is when it'll get going. If you're going to make it down there, doors open at 12:30 at the CLA. And the ladies will come through after about 2 o'clock, which this is a big Monday. You got the solar eclipse happening. Masters Week has begun tonight at 9:20. They'll tip off the men's championship game. I mean, there is just you're running the full gamut if you are a fan of sports and a fan of the skies. So we'll be here for the next couple of hours to enjoy it with you. But, man, what a game, Phil. Hats off to this incredible, incredible team. What a run.
No, I know. I mean, and what an incredible game, too. Just I mean, the wife and I were out back watching on the back porch there. And just, I mean, that first half, just riveting, riveting, good basketball. Just get down early, come back, and then just maintain it. I think that's what you were looking for out of this team. Just, you know, it. An unlikely story here at the end with a perfect season as well, considering what you lost last year, all five starters. I mean, we've all heard the narrative, but Dawn and the ladies just found that way, just found the way to keep it rolling and go right on through both tournaments unscathed. And just complete hat tip to Dawn and the women's basketball program for, you know, just staying the course, doing exactly what they needed to do, and putting on an exemplary showing last night, or, you know, yesterday afternoon as a team. I think that's one of the things that really kind of separated them from Iowa. Not to say that Iowa is nothing but Caitlin Clark. That's not correct. Stokey's a hell of a player. And hats off to her for having such a good game against some bigger competition. But I think top to bottom, the nine players that South Carolina has to rotate in and out are just the nine best, probably against any team.
Yeah, it really was the total team performance. You talk about Raven Johnson. If you go look at the stat book, nothing's going to blow you away except for the four steals. That's pretty spectacular, and the fact that three of them came off of the hands of Caitlin Clark, the best player we've ever seen in the women's game. She had a masterful defensive performance. Dawn Staley crediting her staff with the scout on that. And you go, wow, well, what do you mean? Caitlin Clark scored 30 points in the game, right? 18 in the first quarter, 12 after. That's it, 12 points for the rest of the game. The final 30 minutes, the best player in the history of the sport managed to put 12 points through the hoops. I mean, it was just incredible. It was an incredible defensive performance on her and what they were able to do. And then, of course, they were able to knock down shots, and it was led by the senior, Tahina Pau Pau, and the freshman, and you're going to see him again next year, when Malaysia Fulwiley and, of course, Tessa Johnson are back in uniform for South Carolina. They'll only lose one young lady off of this basketball team, and it's a big one, Camila Cardoso. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be the odds-on favorites to win it again. So there's all sorts of angles to talk about this. Is this – are we in the middle of the South Carolina dynasty in women's basketball? I mean, you have multiple angles. I thought what was really, really neat, too, really, really, really neat, was seeing the country congratulate this program and recognizable names, folks in not just in the media, but folks that are in high up in sports, folks that are, you know, players, actors, actresses, all kinds of stuff. You had the star power out. And I think, too, that it kind of cuts through a lot of what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. Dawn Staley hit the nail on the head when she stopped on the podium, asked for the microphone back, and made sure to congratulate Caitlin Clark for being the goat of all goats, the eyeballs that it brought. I mean, if you happen to miss the numbers on Friday night in the Final Four, there were 14.3 million people that watched UConn and Iowa. It's the most ever, and it's only the most ever just from a few days, because just prior to that, there was over 12 million. So obviously, the Caitlin Clark effect certainly is real. Now, over 7 million watched South Carolina and NC State, and we haven't gotten the ratings back for this yesterday, but I'm sure they're massive. This is probably going to be the most watched game in the history of college basketball on an ESPN or ABC Disney network. And South Carolina's name will be tied to that. But kind of getting back to my point here is, You had all the other stuff. You had the LSU thing. You know, a lot of folks, of course, very negative on LSU now, and I understand why, we all do. Obviously, you had the Caitlin Clark story, unbelievable story, the best personal one player story ever in the game. You had Geno and UConn kind of back in there, and you kind of had that, like you mentioned last week, kind of that grandpa effect. But then as the dust settled, the best basketball team in the country won the title. They cut through all the stuff. They had a story to write of their own, and they wrote it yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is they were not going to allow the narrative to be defined by the other player on the other team. You know, I mean, it just – and I think that's – I mean, that, you know – Caitlin Clark is probably the most prolific shooter that we've ever seen in this game, period. And is a good guard, definitely has high assist numbers and tries to play with that team mentality. But when you put together a team like South Carolina has, like what Dawn Staley has built over her tenure here at South Carolina, these results from yesterday are what you begin to expect. And that speaks a lot to what it is that she's trying to do here at South Carolina. We're fortunate to have her here as our women's basketball coach, because I think without her, this is not happening. That's probably, you know, the dumbest thing I've said today, because the most obvious thing. Yeah. You know, it's like without her, this doesn't happen. And it was that same thing, the same reason that the Gamecocks won yesterday is exactly why I thought UConn would and did give Iowa fits. And that top to bottom, it is a more complete team. And I think UConn just ran out of depth, unfortunately, the other night, because it looked like it was about to go their way. I'd kind of predicted UConn to beat Iowa, even though I wanted to see Iowa against the Gamecocks, which fortunately we did get. But I was pretty close on that UConn one, because it was just, you know, you got Caitlin and a couple of other talents on Iowa. But it's hard to go up against such talented rosters as UConn and South Carolina, and hats off to Iowa for beating UConn and jumping on Carolina early yesterday to give everybody a bit of a scare, but just weren't able to match what it was. I mean, especially just look at the bench points, JB. My goodness.
Well, yeah. You know, well, exactly. Yeah. There's two big stat lines here that really point out just the, look, again, Iowa was a fantastic basketball team. Now, clearly, this goes without saying, you made a dumb comment. I'm going to piggyback on them, make another one. They're not here without Caitlin Clark. There's no doubt about it. But the best team in college basketball won the national championship. Number one, they were 38-0 this year. That kind of proves their worth. And we've got way more to get into on the, from the stat side of things. But here's a number that just has not been talked about at all. 51-29. Carolina pounded the rebounds. They were relentless on the boards. And to make the stat line even worse for the Hawkeyes, two players, Chloe Kitts and Camilla Cardoso, nearly out-rebounded the entire Iowa team by themselves. They had 27 combined. Iowa had 29. Keep in mind, Chloe Kitts had a double-double, 11 points, 5 of 8 from the field, 10 boards, 2 assists, and she played 17 minutes. She had a double-double in 17 minutes. She was one of two, of course, with the double-double because Cardoso also chipped in 15 points to go alongside her 17 rebounds. So you mentioned the team thing. You know, Tessa Johnson's 19 off the bench, 19 of the 37 that the bench scored. Only 18 minutes total were played by the Iowa bench, as a matter of fact. That's it. And South Carolina had four bench players that fit 14 minutes or more. I think Walker got in there just for a brief spell, but she didn't clip a minute. So, you know, in total, this was the best basketball team. They, when you look back on it, it will be one of the most dominant basketball teams in the history of the sport. They're the 10th undefeated program to do it. And the first, I think, since UConn back in 2016, I believe, the year before South Carolina won their first one. But for top to bottom, I think was it you, and I know we got to go to break, but I know we went into the weekend or going into the Final Four, right, Phil? And you had mentioned last week, well, they're talking about the you know, obviously Paige Beckers, rightfully so. They should be. I'm talking about national media. Clearly, Caitlin Clark. I mean, there are all these, you know, you talk about LSU and Angel Reese gets all the fame and all the glory, and there's all these, and then at South Carolina, it's like, well, yeah, they've got Cardoso. Yeah, she's a pretty good player, but, you know, I don't know. They don't really have any stars. The whole team's stars. And that was kind of the rebuttal to this. Like, no, wait a second here. They do, actually. They have 10 McDonald's All-Americans on the team. I mean, right.
Exactly.
Like, they're full of stars. And here's the other thing. For Dawn Staley, you bring in 9, 10, I don't care, 8, 7, what at 4. It doesn't matter what the number is. When you bring in multiple All-Americans in any sport, and they take up the large majority of your roster, and it's much easier, of course, to do this in basketball because the roster's smaller. But you have a bunch of All-Americans, and they take up the large majority of your team. It is not easy at all to get all of them to row in the same direction. You put them in the boat, row in the same, because they all want their numbers. They all want their time. They all want that. That's what they've been their whole lives. You don't become an All-American by not playing. Obviously, these ladies have played their whole careers. They've been the star of every team they've ever been on, and now they're on a team full of stars. And it's really hard to get them to comprehend that. And she just continues to do it every single year. It's really a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, just ask Coach Cal how hard it is, period, because it's the exact same formula. And I realize there's a bit more parity in the men's game than there is in the women's game, but there's still some really good teams out there on the women's side of things that could have put an end to this unlikely run. And they were not able to do it. And, you know, that you got to give a hat off to Coach Staley for being able to manage these large individual talents. And I'm sure the subsequent egos that come along with them to respect the game, which I love that she mentions that whenever she can, and to play together as a unit, to accomplish a team goal and not just the individual ones.
Yeah, there's no question. What an achievement. 38-0. South Carolina wins the national championship. John Whittle is due up next. Mike Moore, we've got a drive around the SEC. We'll get to some Carolina football. Obviously, we'll talk some baseball here with John. They should play every game on Sunday in the SEC. They win those. But pretty poor performances on Friday and Saturday for the baseball team, who continues to be very, very inconsistent, although they're still right in the thick of it in the SEC. Look what LSU's doing in Florida. Florida got swept at Missouri. Sweet Jesus. No, no. It has just been a strange ordeal, but Carolina baseball's got to play better. They are just not playing well. So we'll get to that here in just a little while. But these ladies have won a third championship. They deserve their due, and they'll get it. John Whittle up next here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans, where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how bourbon whiskey got its name. And chicken cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, which is today Bourbon County.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, in Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Gamecock owned and operated.
Building your dream home is often just that, a dream, and sometimes a nightmare. But at the Barn Door Company, they commit to quality and build without sacrifice. Customization, open floor plans, limitless flooring options, maintenance-free and easy installation perks, and affordability are just a few reasons why they've been named one of the best builders in the U.S. Believe in your dreams. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com. The Barn Door Company. Gamecock owned, Gamecock operated.
The preferred sign partner of Gamecock Athletics is Signorama Columbia, and they should be yours too. A full-service sign company that handles design, production, install, and service, Signorama Columbia has helped to bring to life the perfect vision for so many all across South Carolina. Owned and operated by proud Gamecock alumni, they can handle all types of signage, including interior and exterior, vehicle graphics, and more. Go to Signorama.com and find the West Columbia location, or call them at 803-407-9284. Bring your brand to life with Signorama Columbia, and go Gamecocks!
Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark, and go Gamecocks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Cardoso for three. Banks it in! A miracle for the Gamecocks!
I kept him undefeated in the SEC tournament. Camila Cardoso banking that one in. They're still undefeated, and now they're crowned champions. John Whittle with the Big Spur joining us. It's 11:25 on Monday, solar eclipse day, April the 8th. Hey, John.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that that's what's going on today.
Yeah.
Don't look up, they say.
Y'all didn't take the day off for that?
JC did.
It was
oh, JC did.
Yeah. Only gotcha. One of us, yeah, because it's not going to okay. be the full eclipse here in our parts. It's just partial, so we figured only partial.
Gotcha. I flew Ryan back from Cleveland, which is where it's like supposed to be a total eclipse instead of a partial yeah. eclipse. I got him out of there just in time for him to, you know, see a second historic event. He only got to see one.
That's yeah, right. That's okay.
Well, you can't spoil him. Yeah, you can't spoil yeah, him.
Exactly.
if he's still around in 74 years, he'll get a chance to take a peek at the next one. I think it's 2099 or something like that. But, John, you know, I know primarily you don't cover women's basketball throughout the year. This time of the year, it's all hands on deck, and we're getting used to it because here they are again, crowned national champions. They're 109-3 in the last 3 years. They're 167-9 in the last 5 years, and one of those was a COVID shortened season, as we all well know. But they were basically crowned the best team in the country without being able to play March Madness. And then last night you get the biggest star in the game again, Caitlin Clark, looking maybe for a little bit of revenge, but Dawn Staley and this team clearly were more focused on 24 instead of 23. They allowed Iowa the hot start, and after that they climbed back in it. They took control, and really it just never felt in doubt. The best team in the country did what they do, and that's beat up on whoever's in front of them. Iowa goes down. Carolina goes on to win another national title.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have drawn up a better start for Iowa to jump out to a 10-0 lead, be leading by, I think it was 7 at the end of the first quarter. Caitlin Clark was hot. They had other girls who were making some plays too. But then, right, I mean, at the end, I guess halftime, you know, Raven Johnson, right before halftime, Raven Johnson steals and converts that layup. It's like, okay, well, you know, this is looking like South Carolina's game. Like Iowa couldn't have drawn up a better start to this one. And South Carolina's, you know, going to take the lead in the halftime. Right. So it was certainly a big deal for South Carolina to turn it around as quickly as it did. And, you know, as they've done all year, we're able to kind of, beat the other team into submission late in the game.
Well, I mean, there hasn't been – nobody's guarded Caitlin Clark the way that Raven Johnson guarded her yesterday. And I know it maybe came at a little bit of a sacrifice to her overall stat line. Like, you don't get all that stuff when you read the stat line. But make no mistake, I mean, that performance will be remembered forever. I mean, Bree Hall, they all did a great job. They switched it on and off, but it ended up being Raven Johnson's game, John. And it's hard to not believe that really was the difference. Because when she's off, it's hard for Iowa to stay clicking when your best player is just 10 of 28 from the floor. Kind of like what Lamont Paris said. Remember going into the Tennessee game, he was talking about Dalton Connect. He's like, I don't really care if he scores 30. I just need him to take 30 shots to get there. Well, that's pretty much what we saw last night.
Yeah, and I thought Dawn's nailed it as usual. In the press conference after the game, she said, you know, we wanted Caitlin to be inefficient in her scoring. And inefficient is what she was. I mean, it wasn't her worst shooting performance of the year. She had 5 that were worse than what she did last night, but it was pretty darn good out of 39 games for her to have her 6th lowest, you know, field goal percentage. Raven was kind of the straw stirring the drink with that one. You know, ESPN had a graphic up that when Raven Johnson was guarding her, Caitlin was 3 for 11 from the field, you know, which is what, less than 30%. So, and all 4 of her turnovers came when Raven was guarding her. So, you know, cap tip to Raven. I know that Raven Johnson worked really hard on what she was offensively this year because of what Caitlin Clark did to her last year, just kind of shooing her away, brushing her to the side and left her wide open. So I know that Raven worked hard on her offensive game because of that, but She may not have gotten her comeuppance from an offensive standpoint last night, Raven, but she certainly did from a defensive standpoint. So, major kudos to her and the team as a whole for keeping Caitlin Clark, holding her to 30 points, but a very inefficient 30 points.
I think we can all agree that this is probably however, I'm going to say the word biggest, but there's probably better words that you could use, but it's probably the biggest year ever for women's college basketball because of the star power. Caitlin Clark, clearly what LSU brought to the floor. UConn is always going to bring something to the table. They went to the Final Four this year. I mean, of course they did. And then clearly the South Carolina Gamecocks, led by Dawn Staley. I mentioned to Phil in our opening segment that you had all these storylines, right? Caitlin Clark is a major global story. You had this thing going on. You had LSU, which great team on the floor, but certainly off the floor seemed like a lot of distractions, but it did bring a lot of eyeballs to the sport. Again, UConn, I mentioned that, and you can go on. And then South Carolina just cuts through all that stuff. They just cut through all of it, and they went out and won the title. And, it's not like coming into it you had the Asia Wilson or the Aaliyah Boston. I'm talking about from the media standpoint. I'm not talking about within. They know what they have within. But when you look top down, the national media, they're focused on all these other players, and South Carolina just kind of put their heads down and just went in there and whipped everybody that they played in probably the greatest year ever for this sport. What do you think that does for the future? I mean, not that this program wasn't in fantastic shape. It is. They return everybody except for Camila Cardoso. But winning the title when the most eyeballs to ever watch it are watching, does that mean anything? Does it mean more? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, especially when you thought coming into the year that, this might not be rebuilding because, that's not what this program is about. They reload, so to speak. But, you're a pick six preseason poll coming into this, so it's not like you were favored to win the national title. But it, as you said, for this to be maybe the banner year in all of women's college basketball, to go out there and dominate it like they did with a team full of all new starters and a bunch of new players. It says a lot for the coaching job that Dawn Staley did. I was talking with Ryan Bethay. We were sending him up there for the Naismith Coaches Award ceremony on Wednesday this past week. And he said, Dawn's won it the last 2 years. I mean, they may give it to somebody else just because of Dawn Staley fatigue. And I said, you just can't. Like maybe there are some year threes where you find somebody else just to have somebody else's name on the trophy, but you can't this year because of how dominant South Carolina was and because of what South Carolina's team was this year compared to what it was last year. And, of course she did win the award and it absolutely deserved. I thought it was easily her best coaching job that she's done here, and she's had some good ones.
Yeah, speaking of the awards, in case you missed it, Dan Hurley did pick up the men's nod yesterday. It was announced. So this won't be the first year ever to have a winner from the same school. Lamont Paris did not win it. Maybe we were all right. Maybe if had they won a game in the NCAA tournament, he would have snagged that award as well. But I agree with you totally on that. She replaced every starter on the team and went and had a better team. I mean, of the three consecutive she's won, I can make the argument this is the one that she should have won over the last two, right? And that's fair, right?
Absolutely. It's the best coaching job that she's done at South Carolina, in my opinion. So absolutely.
What have you learned about, and I've talked to Dawn before about this, at one of the things that I, before I finish asking the question, John, let me not get off on a squirrel moment here, but I talked to her a few years ago. And because I mentioned to her that I saw her team down at the Folly Beach Pier, and I said, what are they doing there? It was like, a couple of weeks before practice was starting or something. And she said, we do a different team activity every year where we take our group and we ship them off somewhere, and we get rid of their phones and social media and all that stuff. And I guess they get some sort of stipend. You know, there's obviously some rule that allows this. They give you some sort of money to spend, and they have to figure out how to stay in that home for 2 days, 3 days, whatever it is, not being able to sit there and look at Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and text all your buddies and whatever, call home, and you have to communicate. She's like, so they have to go to the grocery store and they got to get food and they have to come home and they got to work together on how to make those meals. And you got to, you know, whatever it takes for those 2 or 3 days without outside communication, they have to communicate with each other within the same walls. You have multiple McDonald's All-Americans on this roster every single year. And Phil said it a minute ago, just ask Coach Cal how difficult it is to bring in the best players every year and get them all to click and get them all to click from day one. What else have you learned on that over the years about Coach Staley and her process of doing so?
Well, I mean, it's clear, and it started, I guess it was her second year when she recruited Kelsey Bone, who was one of the top players in the country. I can't remember all the ins and outs, but I mean, Kelsey transferred out very quickly. And the word we got was just wasn't quite the right fit. But Dawn was not nearly at the level that she is right now in terms of winning at South Carolina. Like, she was still trying to build and establish her program. And, you know, she basically told one of the girls who could help her build that, you know, if it's not working out, it's not working out, you know, didn't beg her to stay. So, I mean, she set the tone early that you got to be a team player and adapt to what we do. We're not adapting to what you do. And if these girls who come in can't do that, if they're looking for something different, that's fine. But you're gonna be a South Carolina basketball player. You're playing for the name on the front, so to speak, and you'll get yours. You'll get yours. You'll have the opportunity to play. You'll have an opportunity to be a great player. You'll be on the biggest platform that there is. But you've got to be a part of the team. So I mean, I think she started showing that with her actions very early on in her career at South Carolina. And, you know, that continues today.
John Whittle, the Big Spurts, 11:37 on Solar Eclipse Day. It's also Masters Week. John, I mean, we got all kinds of stuff going on out there in this big wide world. Coach Beamer, Lamont Paris, even prior to Shane, Coach Muschamp, you heard Coach Muschamp say this from time to time. I've heard Coach Tanner mention this. You get these recruits that come on campus for other sports, and it doesn't happen every time, but oftentimes it does. Were they, was there anything else you want to do while you're here? Yeah, can I meet Dawn Staley? And she's always right there at the call. Who is it, Coach? Okay, I'll come by. Yesterday we saw her. It was like an hour after the game. She comes back out. You know all the guys, you know all the ladies out there, all the local media, one-on-ones. She signs every ball. She signs every hat. She takes every photo. What does she mean to this university?
I mean, she's the face of women's college basketball. She's probably the face of University of South Carolina athletics. And I don't know that there's much shame in that. You know, she's an icon in the sport. I mean, she has done everything the right way in terms of building her program and in terms of you know, winning. So I mean, she's done an incredible job. I mean, I don't know what more can be said about her. She's been incredible for this school, and you know, she's got the titles to back it up too.
Incredible. Who do you think of this group's going to be one of them's going to take over as like the face of college basketball next year, right? Is it Full Wiley? Is it Tessa Johnson?
Is it? I would say Malaysia. I mean, and you know, it goes back to, you know, what she's, how she started her career out in France with that behind the back and finish against Notre Dame.
Almost had another one yesterday.
Yeah. Tried that very early in the game yesterday. And you know, I think she plays this game to where she can certainly be a superstar and one that you know, people, she's probably not going to set scoring records or anything like that, but she, the way she plays the game brings in a different audience too. Like, she just plays the game differently than basically anybody else can out there. And it's really impressive to watch, and seeing it's going to be cool to watch her grow over 4 years.
Incredible stuff. Plenty more on the women's title run ahead as Mike Morgan joins us as well. Again, it's a little bit after 2 today. They'll begin the celebration over at Colonial Life Arena, but the doors will open at 12:30, the flag flying high atop the Statehouse grounds. John, I want to switch over to baseball. They should just play every SEC series, just triple headers on Sundays. They tend to have better luck with that. Friday and Saturday have not been kind the last 2 weeks to this team, and they weren't kind in Oxford, Mississippi either, for different ways. But they did salvage, and they still sit kind of in the thick of it in the SEC, except Kentucky and Arkansas are both at 11-1. I say Kentucky, that's right, folks. And Arkansas are both at 11-1 in their divisions. Gamecocks at 6-6. Before we dive into this, what the hell? So they're out of the top 25 this week. Florida's 17-14. They just got swept at Missouri. They're still in the top 25 somehow. That's insane. I love D1 baseball. They got to be better than that. Have you watched Florida? Have you watched LSU? LSU's 3-9 in the league. The Gators are 6-6. What's going on with those programs?
Yeah, I've only watched a little bit of both of those teams. I mean, Florida, I mean, they're not doing a heck of a lot offensively, to be honest with you, which is a little bit surprising in some ways, because they're not usually great from an offensive standpoint. They're usually solid, but they're not usually great. They usually lean on their pitching staff. And their pitching just has not been good. I mean, they're 13th in the league in ERA in overall games this year. So that's really, really surprising. They're also 13th in batting average, and you know, that ain't good. And you know, the name of the game is run scored. They're 13th in the league in run scored. You know, I know folks want to bag on South Carolina offensively, and it certainly has not been good enough. But South Carolina's scored the sixth most runs in the league this year. I mean, they're not doing really poorly from a run scoring standpoint. It should be better though. Anyway, but that's what's going on with Florida. Is, you know, they're a little bit worse than usual offensively. And they're way, way off the track on what they usually are from a pitching staff standpoint. That's how Florida has built their program, and they're way, way off on what they usually are.
Well, they'll get the Gamecocks this weekend in Gainesville, 6:30, first pitch on Friday night. But South Carolina really, really needs to win a series here. They're just 1-3 in their first 4 series. That one was a big one. It was a sweep over the Vanderbilt Commodores, John. But you mentioned the offense for Carolina, and yesterday it almost came back to bite them again. Goodness gracious, had the bases loaded with nobody out. Couldn't score to put that sucker away, but they did hang once. On. Yeah.
Twice. The seventh and the eighth inning.
Two innings, seventh. Yeah, in a row. Yeah, two in a row.
Scored one in the seventh.
Yeah.
But yeah, they scored one. Between those two innings, they probably should have hung at least 3 or 4 runs on the board, but they didn't. The word has been inconsistent for me. I feel like they've been inconsistent offensively. We're going to get to the staff in a minute. They haven't been good enough either. But offensively, the word has been inconsistent. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I do think that in sports, especially college sports, we throw around that consistency word a little bit too much. It's great to want that. Everybody wants that, but it's really hard to achieve. Like, not very many teams can achieve week in and week out that consistency standpoint, especially in a sport like baseball. But South Carolina has been really inconsistent in a lot of ways. You know, they've also been consistent in a bad way in some ways too. So, you know, it's been a real struggle for a lot of these guys. Some have been up and down a lot. Some have been up or down. I mean, like you look at a Dylan Brewer, and Dylan was red hot to start the year, the first half of the season, or the first half of what has been played so far this season. And then the second half, he's been ice cold. He did have a better day yesterday, I thought. But, you know, and then you look at a guy like Talmadge LaCroix, who started out pretty hot, but has just gone way up and down a lot. So there have been some guys who have just been – it just hasn't been a good offensive year for South Carolina so far. There's nobody who can really say, you know, I've done a great job since I've been put in there, except for perhaps Kennedy Jones. Kennedy's done a really good job throughout, been really consistent in a positive way throughout. But he's probably the only guy who I can think of who can say, you know, I've been good throughout the entire year. Parker Nolan's riding a hot streak right now. He's been really good. Gavin Casas is riding a hot streak right now. He's been really good. There are a few guys who are certainly doing as they should, and there are a few guys who just aren't.
Yeah, I don't know. The offensively, as John said this for weeks, like, we've seen these guys. We know what they're capable of. I mean, you don't become an All-American or get named a preseason All-American for no reason. I just can't figure out what the fix is. You know what I mean? Like, I can't put my finger on it. I would like to see them swing a little bit more earlier in counts if we want to start getting into, like, the X's and O's and the analytics and things that change at bats and stuff like that. Like, I feel like it's, you know, sitting around till you get one or two strikes on you, and then having to hit somebody else's best pitch is probably not ideal. But collectively as a group, I mean, every time there's a runner on base, it's like they freak out. So I don't know what the answer is. I mean, we don't coach the team. From a personnel standpoint, number one, haven't heard anything more on the concussion protocol with Cole Messina. I'm assuming at some point in time this week we'll hear something. Have you?
Yeah, heard? I mean, those things usually take at least a week, so I'm not expecting to see him tomorrow. Right. You know, maybe he'll be ready to go for Florida. You know, hopefully he'll be at least able to travel down there and see how things go. But I haven't heard anything specific. You know, concussions are one of those things where they have a tendency to be a little bit cautious in terms of projecting return times and so forth. Like, you got to hit certain benchmarks, and yeah, you just have to hit those benchmarks. And if you don't, then you can't keep going. So it's not one of those things that you really want to put a timetable on. But I would expect him to probably be out tomorrow, and potentially be back, you know, this weekend if things go really well in terms of his recovery and passing those steps needed.
Well, and this is his second time in concussion protocol, so I'm assuming they're going to be even double, triple, quadruply careful with this thing, because he was in it last year too, right? So you want to be on the safe side with that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you become more susceptible to it. Yeah, so absolutely. And he plays a rough position back there. I mean, he you get beat up back there a little bit, and you take a foul ball in the wrong spot, you know, it can knock you a little woozy. And, you know, that's what happened with Cole. Is he took a foul ball off the mask right near the end of that game, and, you know, just wasn't quite right.
All right. As far as elsewhere, are they – what's going on at shortstop? I want to be very kind to the player here, of course, John. You know me. I understand it. I get it. And we're not going to disparage guys around here. Will Tippett can't hit in the SEC. If he can, he has not shown it. Have they turned the page to Lee Ellis? What do you think?
No, I mean, you're right. He certainly hadn't shown it. And it's been disappointing so far based on, you know, what he did in the fall and somewhat in the preseason. You know, last year he had the hand, wrist, thumb kind of issue going on that, you know, sidelined him for a couple of weeks a couple of months in the summer, that he played through. And, you know, the feeling was that really hindered him from an offensive standpoint last year. You know, he's had every opportunity in the world this year to get back and get going. You know, I know he wants to keep switch hitting. That's probably not the best thing for him in terms of being able to work on your swing, fix your swing. You know, it's twice the amount of work to fix it from both sides of the plate as it is to fix it from one. So, you know, to me, that's probably the next step in terms of trying to get him to do something offensively. You know, I don't know that, you know, this is a permanent deal. They put Tippett back in there yesterday in the sixth inning when the lead was pretty comfortable because of he's a better defensive player. Yeah. You know, I kind of would have liked to have seen Ellis get the whole game and, you know, get a string of about three or four or five games to see what he can do. And consequently, he lost a couple of at bats yesterday by coming out in the inning that he did. So that was a little bit disappointing, but you know, the feeling has been that, you know, Lee is not going to be transformative in terms of what this team can be offensively. And that's why he hasn't played a whole lot up to this point. But, you know, I've asked about him every couple or 3 weeks. And, you know, it's up until this past week, it's been, you know, he's just not quite there yet. He's just not quite ready yet. And, you know, this past Monday wrote in the VIP room that he's continued to improve and gotten closer. And, you know, that his opportunity was probably around the corner. And we saw it this past week. And, you know, Tippett kind of opened that door, making routine errors on Wednesday in that game and then in Friday in that game. And, you know, if you're not going to make your defensive plays, it can't keep you in there. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know that he's gonna hit at all, but it was really disappointing based on, you know, what we've seen or what we saw in the fall that he's been, you know, what he was offensively. So Ellis needs some time to grow out there. He's not gonna be a perfect player. I mean, he only had a few chances this past weekend defensively and had an error in there. I mean, I think that's either three or four errors and very limited action, you know, so far this year. So, I mean, South Carolina just doesn't have a great answer at shortstop right now.
Eddie Copper, Tommy John.
Hadn't been said officially, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I mean, certainly out for a little bit, certainly not pitching tomorrow night. You know, we'll see. We'll see. I haven't gotten the full detail, the full rundown just yet.
If that's, I mean, he's going to be out for a while, no matter what it is. It even if it's close to Tommy John, if that's the case, who do you think will take the ball in the midweek?
Well, that's a good question. Now, are we talking the midweek just tomorrow, or the midweek, you know, going forward? Like, you know, North Carolina is obviously a game that's a little bit different than perhaps you know, a Georgia State or something like that. You know, to me tomorrow, I'm giving the ball to Dylan Eskew in a starting role and trying to throw him four or five innings and see what happens. But you know, that's without looking at a UNC scouting report either. That may be a little bit different, but you know, I think Parker Marlott is somebody you might be able to circle. He's gotten hit a little bit more here lately, but he's been good overall throughout the course of the year. And, you know, he was a guy who they kind of circled before the season as somebody who may be their midweek starter. So, I think he's the guy to look for long term, in the midweek, but tomorrow it may be somebody completely different, given that, you know, it's the North Carolina game.
And then on the weekend, I mean, look, I don't think I'm going to get to Matthew Becker in just a second. He's outside of this conversation. So is Ty Good. Overall, I really don't think the staff is performed that well the last couple of weeks. Those are my thoughts. I think that Chris Veach probably needs to throw more fastballs to make that changeup be as good as it can be. It's the best changeup in the country, but if you throw it 90% of the time, somebody's going to hit it. And Garrett Ganey, when they stretch him out, I love watching him for an inning, 6-7 hitters, but when he gets 2-3 innings, he's going to give up a long ball. And, you know, when you salvage a game in the series, he's going to tell you that they salvaged, even though the other team won the series. I'm not a big fan of that either. But he's got electric stuff. But overall, I feel like this staff has kind of hit a lull, John. It does seem like they know who their starters are on the weekends. But overall, it feels like they've hit a little bit of a lull here. They're going to have to get some of that back, because especially if they're not scoring a bunch of runs every game, they're going to have somebody have a hell of a performance on Friday or Saturday to get a head start on winning a series.
Yeah, you're right. And things went really, really well early on. And, you know, you mentioned that about Garrett Ganey, and what was it, his fifth inning against Clemson that he was throwing, that he finally cracked and gave up that solo home run. You know, he looked good in the ninth inning yesterday, but didn't look so great in the eighth. You know, there have been some things that, you know, were playing out early that maybe weren't quite, I don't want to say they're false, but maybe not quite replicable over and over again in terms of what each team can be, or each player can be. I think they're still kind of figuring out some things. And, you know, that's really not a surprise, given that there were so many question marks on the pitching staff coming into this season. You know, you have to kind of reevaluate a little bit again when you get into SEC play. And I think they're doing that. I completely agree with you on Chris Veach in terms of maybe mixing in a few more fastballs and the curveball too, in addition to that changeup. But they're still figuring a few things out, and that's not uncommon. I mean, Florida's going through it right now. LSU's going through it right now. I mean, the folks who are typically – the folks who have their pitching staffs figured out are really the guys – are really the teams who have a bunch of pitchers who are returning, Arkansas being an example of one. But, you know, it's they're still figuring a few things out from a pitching staff standpoint, and I imagine that they will – continue to do that, and they need to continue to have a couple guys step up. It would be good to see a little bit more Michael Polk. It would be good to see a little bit more Jake McCoy, because those are two guys who I think can be really influential on this pitching staff over the back half of the season.
Yeah, it seems like it just started, you know, a little overperforming, right? You know, relative to expectations, and then just has kind of fallen back to earth here in conference play, which, I mean, some of that I'm sure is to be expected just against better competition, but it just, everything seems to just be so drastically swinging either way with this team. And it's, I don't know, it just, I think it's pointing to a lot of inconsistencies.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong in that. I mean, I think what they've been in SEC play is about what we thought they would probably be going into it. And I don't know that that's necessarily a terrible thing. You know, and they need a little bit of help too. And that's part of going back to the shortstop talk earlier. I mean, that's part of why Tippett keeps playing, is because they need help in there defensively. I mean, Parker Nolan has 7 errors. Talmadge LaCroix has plenty of them too. And South Carolina's got ground ball pitchers. I mean, there's been a lot of talk lately about South Carolina having sinker ball pitchers and getting ground balls and that kind of good stuff. And they are. And, you know, if you have a couple of guys on the infield who aren't making plays defensively, then that's going to limit their opportunities for success. I mean, if that first Alabama loss on Thursday night, I mean, there was a routine double play ground ball hit towards Talmadge that would have kept all of the runs in that, I think it was that seventh or eighth inning off the board. And South Carolina probably goes on to win that game. if that play's made. Of course, it wasn't even ruled an error because some of these scorekeepers in the SEC just give everything a hit as long as the ball's in play. It's weird. But you know, those kind of plays change what the pitching staff looks like. I mean, if Gavin Casas doesn't slip and fall over on that play against Alabama on Saturday, even though South Carolina wins, like that saves five runs from scoring or four runs from scoring. That makes you feel a whole lot different about what Garrett Gainey's done. It makes the numbers look so much better. I mean, those two plays from that series turn the series by six, seven, eight runs. And you feel a whole lot better because you've won two games and lost one. Your numbers look a whole lot better. And there are teams, there are plays like that all over the place with every team. Like, I'm not trying to play the what if game and that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, like, South Carolina is at the right near the bottom of the league in fielding percentage. So let's not pretend
great point.
Like South Carolina's been good defensively in helping out their pitchers.
That's a hell of a point. I'll say this, we'll end it on this note. Hat tip to Matthew Becker. At the beginning of the year, Phil, you know this, JC, you know this, and John, you know this. I said this staff needed Matthew Becker. And I just feel like he's got to be in the rotation. He should be after what he did yesterday. I know they grinded him, but he grinded right back, and sure as hell hope he gets another chance this weekend down in Gainesville. Love watching him pitch, and he's a lefty that they need to have.
Yeah, and, you know, Matthew's been great all year out of the bullpen and absolutely deserved the opportunity to go out there in a starting role. And his pitch count got up a little bit, but that's what Texas A&M does. I mean, They run their offense similarly to what South Carolina tries to be in terms of being a tough at bat, work counts, go deep into counts, foul off pitches with two strikes, take balls that are just out of the zone and not chase. You know, they try to work pitchers and you know, they did some of that, but Matthew Becker didn't give in and had no walks. I mean, you think about what his career has been like. He's walked too many guys from time to time, and he hadn't been walking anybody this year. Eight strikeouts, no walks yesterday against a really fine hitting Texas A&M team. You know, cap tip to him, as you said. You know, he's been really good, and will certainly I would think be back in the starting rotation this coming weekend against the Gators.
John, you got a busy week. Busy, busy week. Carolina heads to Gainesville. We know you'll be headed down there with them. Thanks for all you do, my man. VIP room tonight, a little after 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We got to figure out what we can figure out, but there'll be something up there.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate you guys.
There you go. John Whittle, our coverage of Gamecock baseball, proudly presented by Resto Pros of the Midlands. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. The anthem, the golden tones up next here on ITG.
We have started in 1979. Because we're a manufacturer, we're able to control our costs. That's why we like to manufacture as much of the product as we can, because in our factory stores, we can offer a competitive edge over other people around the country. When people come into one of our Palm Casuals, it's like they're buying their car at Detroit. They're going right to the factory and buying their car.
30-day money-back guarantee. That's a big deal with us. I mean, we give 30 days to do anything. I mean, return it, change it, get a different color, get your money back.
When you pull into a store and it says Palm Casual, you know you're at a factory store.
Rescues and Resin, proud supporters of Carolina Rise. They are also proud partners of the show. They make products you can't get anywhere else. Custom designed wood and resin products that make your tailgate, make your home, or make anything stand out. Order a custom cutting board, coasters, wall art, tables, and more. Contact Dustin and Tabitha at rescuesandresin.com today. Rescuesandresin.com, and put your imagination to work. Rescues and Resin, proud partners of Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
Hey, Gamecock fans, Mike Morgan here. During my time in Columbia, one of my favorite places to eat was Salsarita's. When I go back now for work or any other reason, it's still Salsarita's. Yeah, I'm like you. I love tacos. I love Tex-Mex. Where are you going to go to get them? Well, you've got two convenient Salsarita's locations, one in Lexington at the Target Center and one in West Columbia as well. Now, if you like tailgating, and who doesn't? Whether it's for a football game or anything else, they've got the catering hotline. Get yourself some Fiesta packs to take tailgating. Get yourself the Three Amigos bundles for tailgating. They make catering easy with a fresh, hot setup. And again, you just call the phone number 803-543-6297 to set it up. You can also look them up online, or you can even download the app. Salsarita's is just a cut above the rest. That's why they're serving Williams-Brice Stadium and the South Stands, also serving in the Colonial Life Arena. Again, that catering hotline number, make it easy for you and the folks out there. You don't need to settle for sandwiches every time. 803-543-6297. 803-543-6297.
It's 2024, and it's time to get in shape. Charleston Fitness Equipment can help you do just that in Mount Pleasant. The Wilkins family, big Gamecock fans and proud supporters of Carolina Rise and our programming on the Chief Sports Network. But most importantly, proud supporters of you getting healthy and staying healthy. CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Find them on the Chief Sports app and in Mount Pleasant. Happy New Year.